with the first pick.
Guys, welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm Devin Jackson, joined by Corey Kinnon. We're back this week to talk some offensive tackles towards the end of the show, but it's a big day for the draft community. It was the declaration cutoff for underclassmen, and a lot of people were kind of waiting around to see three names in particular on the offensive side of the ball, if they would declare or not. And obviously, C.J. Stroud, Quinn Johnston, and Jordan Addison, all of them are in, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, Corey, how you doing, man? It's been a little bit since we last talked.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Good to be back. You know, it was my son's first birthday last week, so I was out of commission last week celebrating and had his party over the weekend. So, but it's good to be back. Good to talk some offensive tackles. We're, you know, college football is officially over. Senior Bowl's next. Declaration Day was today, so I think we got a pretty jam-packed episode. So I'm just happy to be back with you, Devin.
For sure, man, and happy belated birthday to your son as well, of course. Always a great thing to celebrate. But switching gears to kind of the news we mentioned at the top of the show, Addison, Stroud, and Johnston are all in. Corey, for you, was there any doubt from those three guys was there any doubt from you, at least, that these guys would go ahead and enter their name?
I didn't think so. I'm surprised. We still haven't heard anything about Leetu Latu yet. I haven't seen anything. I've been looking all day. But no, like with Stroud, I mean, I knew they didn't even have any NIL money to begin with, really. Ohio State's really struggling for NIL money. So, so I didn't think he would go back. And so I'm not super shocked, especially looking at, you know, who's at the top of the draft, how many quarterbacks are going, you know, probably the top five, top seven. So not really shocked by any of them. Some guys I wish would have declared, you know, again, Leetu Latu, still waiting to hear on, probably tells me he's probably not declaring if we haven't heard anything yet. But Johnny Newton out of Illinois as well, man. I really like his tape a lot. Ready to go back and dive back into his tape and see where he takes off at in 2023 now. I thought he was a top five defensive tackle in this class. So I'm not really surprised by any decision. I knew Johnny was kind of on the fence again. I think he's only 20 or 19. He's a redshirt sophomore. So he's still got plenty of time, but I already think his tape's really good. So that's a little disappointing, but not super shocked otherwise.
Yeah. Newton is a guy that I've been kind of just been popping on my screen, watching some of the Illinois defensive guys. So, like you said, very surprised he went back. But yeah, overall, I'm not too surprised. And a lot of people got worried because Stroud kind of drew it out. But if you remember correctly, Justin Fields waited until the last day as well to declare back when he went through the process. So you just got to give guys time to, you know, just kind of digress from the season. They had a tough loss against Georgia. And, you know, now he's heading off to the NFL. But as we're getting closer and deeper into the kind of draft season with NFL playoffs still going on, but more and more teams every week are going to be added kind of to that draft pool. One big event coming up in about 2 weeks now will be, or whenever this comes out, will be 2 weeks from the day that there'll be weigh-ins and then practices later down Mobile. But we're not going to do a full breakdown of the Senior Bowl invites because it would be hours and hours long of content, and a lot of guys I'm still trying to catch up on as well. But we're going to do a few guys on the offensive side of the ball that we're looking forward to watching, and then defensive side of the ball. But offensive side of the ball this week. So I'm going to let you go first, Corey. Who's one guy that you... And it doesn't necessarily be a top guy, but a guy that you think could prove a lot down in Mobile on the offensive side of the ball.
On the offensive side of the ball, I think Blake Freeland has a chance. I mean, he's going to test like a freak, but I think there's some obvious concerns with his pad level. Again, he's 6'9", so he's a massive dude, and then he's kind of stiff. Again, he's a good athlete, like a good linear athlete. He moves side to side well, but I don't think he has a lot of knee bend, and so I'll be interested to see how he works. You know, those kind of those lever points, those leverage points with his. He's got long arms, 35-inch arms, and so can he keep defenders and one-on-ones out of his chest? I mean, I saw some of that struggle on his tape again because he's just so tall and his pad levels is naturally rises. So going against guys like you know, Zach Harrison, and I don't know if they're on the same team and they'll do one-on-ones or if it's going to have to wait to the game on for that. But like some of those other more explosive pass rushers with long arms, how can he protect his frame and keep those guys out of his chest as well and win that leverage battle? So Blake Freeland's a guy that I'm watching for sure on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, watched him, and we'll probably mention him later when we talk tackles or top five tackles. But I think he could certainly use a big week down mobile. I'm gonna go to a quarterback position. I'm gonna go with Jake Haener, from Fresno State, as a guy that I think could have a big week, and that really needs to kind of prove that he can operate in kind of an upper echelon of talent. I think of the quarterbacks down there, he probably is one of the more creative out of structure, at the very least, being able to keep plays alive and has some accuracy throwing over the middle of the field, throws with timing and touch. But obviously, he's not the biggest guy. He's a bit small, but he's a gamer. You know, he's someone that comes ready to play, comes prepared, and has some clean footwork in the pocket. So I'm very interested to see, one, how does he look when, you know, he's not throwing to guys like Jalen Cropper that he's familiar with, who's heading to the East-West Shrine game? And then two, how does he handle pressure? Is he going to step up into pockets? Will the height be an issue? Because there's a lot of big dudes going down in Mobile. So we'll be able to see over that line when they go into full team drills. And, you know, how well can he throw the football from the pocket? So I think that'll be a big point in contention for me, to see just how well he looks in person and how he handles kind of that pressure surrounding it. Does another guy stand out for you as well? You know, on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. So a quarterback is a good one. Jake Haener's a good one. I'm gonna go with another quarterback as well. A D2 dude who got an invite and Tyson Badgett. So again, D2 guy had opportunities to transfer up. I know West Virginia and Maryland were two schools that had P5 schools that had interest in him out of Shepherd. But again, I've heard there, you know, there might have been some eligibility issues where not all those credits would have transferred, and he might have been ineligible if he tried to transfer up. But regardless of what happened, he made the decision to stay at Shepherd and fought it out another year at the Division II level. And now gets to go against all these P5 names at the Senior Bowl. So I'm interested to see how fast things move for him. Clearly, you know, at P5 level with P5 talent, things are going to move quicker than they do at the Division level. And again, he's in a spread raid Shepherd. So, you know, I think he has the ability and a lot of the concepts that he's playing at Shepherd are very much timing rounds, very much. Get your eyes to the right spots pre-snap and get the ball out. So I'm interested to see kind of how he works against some of these, you know, bigger name ones than he's facing at D2 schools, and how fast his eyes are kind of working with that sped up competition as well. So Tyson Badgett's a guy that I'm watching for sure.
Yeah, just being able to watch a few of his games, you know, you see kind of the learned traits he has, but like you said, how is he going to handle the speed that's going to be down in Mobile? And I'm gonna go with another guy, or one of your guys that you identified last year, and Dontayvion Wicks, receiver from Virginia. I want to see him. First of all, away from the travesty of an offense that Virginia ran this year. But two, I want to see, you know, was last year just a admiration, or was this something that, you know, he just put in a bad system his final season at Virginia? Because when I watched him in over the summer and in the spring of last year, he looked like a totally different player this year on film. Just the opportunities weren't there. The connection wasn't there with Armstrong, who did return and, you know, had some intrigue before he decided to transfer. But I think for him, it's going to be about how well he can, you know, beat one-on-one coverage, How does he look? You know, in those contested catch situations, and I just want to see him just have an overall a really good week, and you know, kind of put his name back on the map, because he fell off hardcore. He was a guy that could have been a preseason or in a discussion to be a top five receiver in his class, but then this year happened, and he just kind of fell down the boards, so to speak.
Yeah, I like Wicks a lot too. I'm really interested to see how he shows up. Again, you mentioned that Tony Elliott hire going from Bracco Mendenhall to Tony Elliott was just tumultuous for the Virginia offense. It's led to Brennan Armstrong transferring out to NC State. It led to a massive drop in production from Wicks. So, and he's on tape, at least, he doesn't appear to be one of the more twitchier guys. So I want to see. And maybe that's incorrect. Maybe that's me and needing to go back and watch some more tape, but we'll see how he kind of uses his release packages and how he uses his hands at the top of routes in those one-on-one drills. And again, the one-on-ones can get a little wacky, and get a little out of context. And people tend to put those like, elevate those when evaluating players. And I don't think they say that much, but I will be watching. Can he diversify a release package? Can he show me he can wipe hands at the top of his routes? Can he show me he can create subtle separation when he's coming out of his breaks? Things like that can go a long way, even in those one-on-one drills. So Wicks is a really, really strong candidate as well. Switching to the defensive side of the ball, Devin, who's a name that you're watching on the defensive side of the ball at the Senior Bowl coming up here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting names down at the Senior Bowl when you scroll through, especially in the defensive line class. I think it's probably the most talented, you know, of the group. But my eyes go to a edge rusher that you know, was a little bit overshadowed by his teammate, and to me, I think there's some tools there, but the hand usage is an issue, and that's Allie Gay from LSU. Dude has some long levers, and you can see it when he fully extends on pass rushes. He can quickly win on inside moves, but there's just not a lot of consistency, and there's not a lot of a pass rush plan. A lot of the time he's trying to bull rush, or he's trying to win on an inside move, and once that stop, you basically kind of see the effort take over, and he's able to still cause havoc. But to me, I want to see what coaching does for him. And to me, it kind of reminds me of another player a couple of years ago down Mobile, Janarius Robinson from Florida State. In terms, not a direct comp, but in terms of how they struggle using their hands, and there's so much potential there. You know, there, like I said, he has some long arms and made some intriguing plays on film, but there's just not enough consistency down and down. So in a deep edge class, can he, you know, kind of make a name for himself and earn himself some money down Mobile when all the eyes are going to be on like Zach Harrison, Tyree Wilson, and names like that? Can he make some noise? So I'm very interested to see what he does.
It's a good name. It feels like we've been talking about Allie Gay for 3 years.
Yeah.
It just feels like we've been talking about him for a long time.
Yeah. He's one of those names that lingers and just hasn't quite put it all together.
Yeah. I'm going to go to a defensive tackle for my first guy. And I'm going to go with my guy who still, for some reason, is not getting buzz. And, you know, I've talked to Dane Brugler a little bit, and he said he knows scouts that have a fifth round grade on this guy. And I have no idea why, because by my eyes, like, he's long, he's explosive, he's athletic, he's got heavy hands. I think he uses his hands better than a lot of the defensive tackles in this class. And that's Byron Young out of Alabama, man. And so, like, again, he's 6'3", 300, 33 5/8-inch arms. So he's almost got 34-inch arms, massive levers. Like, I don't understand why he's still getting mocked in, like, late third, early fourth rounds on these simulators. Again, Dane said he knows some scouts who have fifth-round grades on this guy. And I'm just like, why? From my eyes, again, only Brissy and only Carter, obviously not in that order, Carter first, Brissy second, are the only two defensive tackles that I can definitively say are better than Byron Young. And I think he's going to go out and he's going to dominate one-on-ones. He's going to get into blockers' chest. He's going to convert speed to power to high level in those one-on-ones. And I think he's going to have a really strong week. And then follow that up and go into the combine where he's going to test well. Again, I think he's really explosive, really talented. So Byron Young from Alabama is a name that, one, I'm still baffled that we're not talking about, and two, just doesn't genuinely seem to have all that much NFL hype. So I want to see how he goes down into Mobile and how he dominates and how he performs.
we've seen guys that you know, have those late round grades go down in Mobile and really tear it up. So very interested to see if he's one of those guys. I'm gonna go with another player, but this one's a linebacker, and this is a guy that me and you have talked about when he was down in Miami of Ohio, and that's Ivan Pace Jr. From Cincinnati. I'm very surprised he's not getting hype as well, because he's just one of those guys that he's always making plays. He has pass rush upside, someone that's has instincts sideline to sideline. He had a hit, I want to say, earlier in the season against Indiana where he depleted a guy. You know, running from the middle of the box out to you know, the sideline. But not only that, he stacks up the stat sheet. Every play that, you know, is made at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage, he's making. And this was something you saw on his Miami, Ohio film, and he carried over to Cincinnati. And to me, I think he's one of the more intriguing linebackers in a group to me that's not, you know, it's like a lot of depth pieces in this linebacker room at Mobile, but not a lot of potential stars. I think he could be a potential starter for an NFL team. So I'm very excited to see him in person. I think he's going to have a lot more buzz coming out of Mobile than he does going in. And I think he's really going to make a name for himself down the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, that's an interesting name. He originally had a Shrine invite and recently just got that Senior Bowl invite. I think it was like last week he got that Senior Bowl invite. So again, he's undersized. Transferred from Miami of Ohio to Cincinnati. I am interested to see how he handles the one-on-one drills with tight ends and running backs. They always do those because I don't see a lot from him when he's in a backpedal. So I'm interested in that. Again, I think his eyes are great. I don't know how good of an athlete he is, but I do want to kind of see how he does in a backpedal. So that's a really good name. I'm going to go to the safeties. And you know, being a Columbus, Ohio guy, I could have gone Zach Harrison, whatever. But Ronnie Hickman just got an invite this week. A redshirt junior declared out of Ohio State safety. Again, he was kind of the main communicator on the Ohio State defense, did a lot of the quarterbacking, but played a lot of box and a lot of slot. And again, I think that's a really good role for him at Ohio State, but I kind of want to see how they utilize him in those team drills. Are they going to have him in single double high looks? Or are they going to have him exclusively in the box? How will he thrive? How will he do in those one-on-one drills against tight ends, against running backs? So I'm interested in kind of seeing how. Because again, on his tape, yeah, I say he's a really good box slot, but I don't see a lot of range. I don't see a lot of ball hawking ability to thrive when you kind of have to throw him in single high or when he has to, you know, cover half the field in two high looks. So that's kind of the stuff I'm interested in. And again, I think he's a great tackler. I think he knows his run fits. I think he's a really good downhill player. And I think he does a pretty good job when he's in man coverage from the slot as well, on underneath routes to sink in to hit pockets and use his hands really well to maintain leverage and man coverage. But when he's forced to turn and run, how is Ronnie Hickman gonna look? And again, they might not even throw him back there. They might say, yeah, we know who you are, and this is what NFL teams know you are, so this is where you're gonna be. But again, I think he's a good player, kind of overlooked as well. I think he's a fringe top 100 player, so I'm interested to see how Ronnie Hickman kind of shows out too.
Yeah, he made a lot of good plays, especially down the stretch for Ohio State. So I think he'll be interesting name to watch, because that safety room in Mobile is pretty deep. They got a lot of talent. Chris Smith, J.L. Skinner, two names as well to watch. But yeah, a lot of good names here in Mobile, or will be down in Mobile. So especially on the defensive side of the ball, I think defense has a quite the advantage. In terms of talent and how well they can, you know, or how well the talent stacks up, at least on the defensive side of the ball, compared to the offensive Mobile. But like I said, that's happening in 2 weeks, and we'll talk more about that as it gets closer. But now is the main event, the top five tackles for us, and I'll tell you what, this tackle class is loaded. There's a lot of good talent. And there's a lot of diversity of talent too. You know, there's guys that are big. You got the DeJuan Jones of the world, but Broderick Jones is crazy athletic for his size, and is probably going to test out of this world. And then obviously you have Paris Johnson, Anton Harrison, and so many other names. But we'll go 5-1 as we done on other shows. And Corey, I'll let you go for first for your number 5 tackle.
Yeah. So my number 5 is at Ohio State. Again, we're probably both going to have 2 Ohio State guys on our top 5s. Maybe not. Number 5 for me though is DeJuan Jones. Again, massive dude, 6'8", 360-pound mammoth, was a basketball recruit too coming out of high school. If you watch his basketball highlights, it's actually pretty funny. Really, really funny. There's one where he gets an and one and falls over, and literally 3 of his teammates grab him to pull him up. It's very funny. But DeJuan Jones, for his size, and again, he slimmed down a little bit this offseason for Ohio State. His foot speed is not bad for being 360 pounds, which is what he's listed at. I think he moves pretty darn well. I think there are some balance issues. Again, a guy like that not going to shift his weight super well. I think, again, kind of what we were talking about with Freeland and the Senior Bowl, there's not a lot of knee bend when you're that big and that tall. So I think defenders can get into his chest a little bit. But again, he moves really well. That even includes getting to the boundary. I mean, you can watch him bury dudes out wide, 10, 15 yards down the field. And I like his hands a lot too. I've seen some really good hand replacement to win back inside leverage. He's got a nasty snatch trap that he loves to hit as well. So again, there are some deficiencies in his game, but DeJuan Jones is a guy who I think is probably going to go top 64, might go top 50. I think he probably still tests pretty well at that size. And who knows, if he tests well at 6'8", 360, some team in the top 32 might say, yeah, I'll take a shot on that. So, and his arms are 36 inches as well. So there's a lot to love with DeJuan Jones. So he falls in at number 5 for me here.
Yeah, both Ohio State guys are in my top 5, and as we talked about in one of our first episodes, I'm incredibly high on DeJuan Jones. Just missed a first round grade from me. Have a high second on him, but he's actually not number 5 on my list. Number 5 for me is Anton Harrison from Oklahoma, and I know you're a little bit higher on him, but for me, Harrison is just, there is very little I saw wrong with his game. And I thought for him, the movement skills were there. He's someone that, has the adequate length to handle some of the longer arm edge rushers. But he has some core strength as well to deal with guys that try to bully him and try to hit the bull rush on him as well. Thought he was very fundamentally sound. His steps were very quick, got up and down really quickly in pass sets. Able to pass off twists really nicely. His pass bro is probably the best part of his game for me. I just really enjoyed how he moved laterally, able to pass off twists, able to counter against, pass rush moves, able to reset hands. Saw a lot of that in his game. I thought he could be a little bit stronger in the run game, get a little bit more movement. But I think overall he's solid in the run game. And for me, I just really like his ability to move out in space too. He's an athletic guy that you can ask to put him on the perimeter. He made some nice plays on the perimeter. But yeah, so I'm very interested to see how kind of the NFL views Harrison, because I think there's not a ton of hype around him right now, but I certainly think he's a guy that I could see going at the end of round 1.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because my number 4 guy is Anton Harrison. So I really like Anton Harrison as well. I have a second round on both him and DeJuan. Again, you mentioned a lot of things that I really like. He's a very smooth mover, very, very smooth mover, has a really nice pass set. Really enjoy his ability to set wide, his ability to set vertical, and he even jump sets well. And you mentioned, even though he's not one of the bulkier offensive tackles, I think he does a really good job of knowing pre-snap how he's going to operate. So that means, you mentioned he has a really good anchor. Again, I don't know if his core strength is really that strong, or if he knows, okay, I'm going against this guy, he's going to hit me with power, I need to be prepared to anchor right away. Or if it's a speed guy, he knows I got to be prepared to keep my feet moving and be ready for anything. But whatever it is, I think Anton has a really strong knowledge of what the man across from him is going to throw at him and how to counter that. So that leads to him dropping his anchor really quickly against power. And showing he has a good anchor. I think his hands could be stronger. I don't think he's a mauler in the run game. Not particularly a physical player, but there's a lot to love with Anton Harrison. Nice hands. Again, they could be stronger, but the savvy he uses with his hands, his set is one of the smoothest in the class. Just a really, really solid mover, really solid player. So, Anton's my four.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy this film. And we'll do at the end, but his teammate, Wayne Morris, isn't too bad either. We'll talk about some guys that just missed our top five list towards the end of the show. Number four for me is DeJuan Jones. And you hit the nail on the head with how good he is and what he's able to bring to the table at his size. For me, it really kind of solidified watching him in person, seeing just how good he was and the ability to go against that Georgia defense and still move pretty well. There's still times he got beat. Jalen Carter is a freak. He's still going to win when he does. And he threw Jones at one point in the game. But to me, hit him with snatch trap. That's his go-to move for sure, in pass pro. And I just thought he moved better overall. I think, cutting down the weight a little bit certainly helped from last year to this year. Balance is not always there, but I thought it was a lot better than last year. And I just really like how nasty he plays. He plays through the whistle. He's driving dudes out of bounds, finishing, kind of in dominant position. And there's just a lot to like, with Jones. And I think you're going to have to take, the size and kind of how his pad level and, how defenders can get into his chest. That's something you're going to have to live with. But his resetting hands and how quickly he can do that, I think, kind of offsets that and makes him tackle number four for me.
I love it. I love it. Again, DeJuan's a good player. I mean, again, this tackle class isn't like 2020 where four names right at the top. There isn't a run of Andrew Thomas, Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton, Tristan Wirfs. Like, that's not this class, but I think there's a lot of really solid talent back end of round one, early into round two, even a little bit into round three. So these guys that we're saying are four and five are pretty talented players. Moving to three, this guy was actually four for me. Anton was three for me for a while, but the stretch of games that Broderick Jones put together in the playoffs is unbelievable. To the point where I have to say, man, this guy's OT3 and has the ceiling to be the best tackle in this class. Like, again, today I say he's OT3. Talk to me in 3 years and I won't be shocked if he's developed into an all-pro tackle. Again, length out the wazoo, long, long arms, athletic ability off the charts. Still a little clunky in his set, but that it looks a little bit cleaner down the stretch. His Ohio State tape going against JT Tuimoloau and Zach Harrison is just, it's really good stuff. I thought in the SEC championship game, BJ Ojulari gave him some fits with bend and athleticism around the high side, but he dealt with power with Zach Harrison really well. And then JTT is the who can throw a little bit more bend, who can move a little bit twitchier along the outside track. And I thought he did a good job mirroring and staying square with him as well. So I'm putting Broderick at three. The traits, man, there's not a tackle in this class with better traits than Broderick Jones. So I get people who say Broderick Jones is OT1 in this class. I get it. For me, I still would like to see a little bit more refinement with his hands, a little bit cleaner of a set in his lower half. I still think he's a little clunky, some stuff to work through, but again, he's a redshirt sophomore. So highest traits in the class. Who knows, by the time he tests, he's going to go first round today, if the draft were today, but he's going to test off the charts as well. So he could continue to climb, but I have no opposition to anybody who says this guy's the best tackle in the class. This guy's the second best tackle in the class. For me personally, he's OT3, but again, talk to me in 3-4 years and tell me, whoa, you were wrong. This guy's an all pro. I'll say, yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, he's a little bit higher on my list, but man, and I talked to you after the game about this, but that Georgia game, or the Georgia Ohio State game, that really kind of shifted kind of my thought process on him a little bit. And then he went out and dominated TCU. So moving to my offensive tackle three, Paris Johnson Jr. from Ohio State. And it really was a close battle between he and Broderick Jones, because both of them are supremely talented underclassmen that, to me, it was separated by half a point. But for me, Paris Johnson Jr. came in at OT3. And he does a really nice job, you know, really combating different types of edge rushers. I know he gave up a sack against Georgia, but really from that point on, he played a really clean game and did a really nice job, you know, getting those hands off his chest and replacing them, moving laterally and vertically. Really have no issues with kind of his movement. I thought his Northwestern game was his best run blocking tape put on film. He did a really nice job moving at the point of attack in a game that, you know, really didn't fit Ohio State style. They were able to still grind out yards on the ground. But for me, the kind of the difference between the two is, you know, I know Broderick Jones is only a 1 year starter for Georgia. But the difference between the two is like, I see kind of, for me, it was purely looking at them as tackles because Paris Johnson has that background as a guard as well. I think there's a chance he's valued a little bit more highly for teams that may not necessarily need a tackle, but can move him inside. But I think he could do a better job of, you know, at the initial point of attack, you know, not allowing defenders to get into his chest, because it was a good bit happening on the Michigan game film. But overall, I really like his game. I think he's a player that should go in the top 15 and will bring immediate, you know, like at least three to four spots he can play on the offensive line. No question asked. I think that's how good he is. Or can bring to an NFL franchise.
I love it. We'll get to Paris a little bit for me as well. We'll go there, so I won't spoil it too much there. Moving on to number two, man. So I bet, although he might be your one. My number two then is Peter Skoronski out of Northwestern. So with Skoronski, you won't find a more refined tackle in the class. You won't find a player who knows how to overcome some limitations by using body framing and by using his technique. He can vertical set, he can wide set, he can jump set at a high level. So again, I think that refinement is off the charts. He moves well in one game. He moves bodies off the point of attack. There's a lot to love about Peter Skoronski, but what keeps him from OT1 for me is that he's in the body of a guard. It's different than like Rayshon Slater for me, at least. I think his arms are probably shorter than Rayshon Slater. He doesn't move as well as Rayshon. Like, again, Peter Skoronski's refined, yes, very refined, but he's not Rayshon Slater. Like they're completely different prospects. I don't think he's going to test as athletic as Rayshon Slater did. I question how good of an athlete Skoronski is as well. I think his IQ is off the charts. I think his refinement's off the charts. But there are limitations to his game. Again, he's in the guard of his body, in the body of a guard. We'll see how he tests. He could blow me away. But I think he wins a lot with refinement. And that's going to keep him from OT1 for me. So Skoronski's going to fall at 2 for me.
Yeah, he's my OT1. And it really just comes down to the technician he is. And just how valuable that will be, I think, in his evaluation. And to me, I think he's one of those guys that you take, you know, even if you don't have a left tackle need. But if you need a left tackle, I don't know if he should be your first guy on the list necessarily. But I think just how good he is as a technician, I think it just kind of speaks for itself. But my OT2 was Broderick Jones. We talked a little bit about him. But to me, getting to see him live, I think, was a big difference just because, like, you know, you watch these dudes on tape and you see how well they can move, but, you know, to be able to handle what they were throwing at him in Zach Harrison and JTT, especially in the Ohio State game, it was amazing to see him kind of learn on the fly. And to me, you bet on that type of upside where a guy is figuring it out in front of you. You know, it's not like he's taking like 3-4 weeks to develop. He's like developing with every snap on the field. You know, every snap is meaningful and he takes it, I don't want to say seriously, but you can tell he takes in a lot of that coaching. And that speaks to Georgia staff and how well they prepared him, first of all, to be able to play at such a high level at a premium position, especially in the SEC. I mean, you get dudes throwing And I just wish we would have seen Alabama and Georgia play, because I want to see him go one-on-one with Will Anderson. I think that'll be a fun matchup to see just, you know, how much he can kind of combat that and whatnot. But Jones is my OT2. I think the athleticism space really is kind of a separation aspect for me versus a lot of the tackles. He's not only moving well in space, he's like leading blocks in space, you know, on like screens. There was a touchdown run against TCU by Stetson Bennett where he was lead blocking for Stetson Bennett and escorted him to the end zone, essentially. So there's so much good, especially down the stretch of the season. I think he showed there's still some, like you said, some, you know, growth immaturity, you know, just dealing with some speed rushers. Ojulari's a first round talent he makes most dudes look silly. So I'm not super surprised by that, but I think with more experience and, you know, honing in more on this technique, I think he's a guy that could be an all pro in 3 or 4 years, as you said.
Again, yeah, you'll get no complaint out of me about Broderick Jones, because he's, again, off the chart tools, and he's getting better every single game. So, so that moves us to one. Again, you said Skronsky is your one. Since I've already broke down Skronsky a little bit, why don't you go ahead and say what you like about Skronsky that puts him at OT1 for you?
Yeah, for me, I think the Ohio State game really kind of started to turn me a little bit, you know, because once again, two pass rushers that bring a different skill set, and there were reps that he didn't win, and it's because of his length or lack of length, but to be able to get into the chest of Zach Harrison, you know, with some of his skill and refinement, you know, replacing hands, swiping them, hand fighting, and doing things like that, I think really started to turn the tide. And then, you know, what he did against Illinois and Wisconsin, you know, with kind of how both defensive schemes are throwing a lot of twists at you. They're throwing a lot of different body types, and he was still able to handle it and, you know, really be more of a savvy player versus a you know, athletically gifted guy. And to me, you know, a lot of people are asking, you know, is he like Rashawn Slater? Not really. You know, they're not similar, I think, at all in terms of, you know, just how the style of play they play with. But I think Skronsky is like extremely savvy. You know, he's someone that time play in, play out, you know what you're going to get with him. There's not going to be any dip in play. There's not going to be any inconsistency snap to snap. You know, when he hits the target, you know, he hits the defender's chest every time. You know, there's no wide hands. There's no sloppy hands. You know, everything about him is calculated and buttoned up. So that's what made him OT1 for me. I understand that he's probably not gonna be a first tackle taken off the board, and you know, there are guys that have higher ceilings, but right now I think, you know, he can hold his own at tackle in the NFL. I don't know if he's going to be someone that lasts his entire career there, but I think he's going to find wherever he ends up at, you know, whether it's at guard, whether it's at tackle, I think he's going to be a really good player.
I agree. Echo the things that I said. And you had Paris Johnson as your OT3. I had Paris Johnson as my OT1. Again, I think it goes to show how much of this class there isn't a top guy. There isn't a Penei Sewell in this class who you're like, yeah, that's the dude in this class. But again, the depth is nice. You could have those 1 through 3 interchange any way you want. But again, for me, it's Paris Johnson Jr. I like his tools. So again, with Broderick Jones, I like his, I love his tools. I think he's clunky. For Peter Skoronski, it's, I really love his game, but I don't think he has the tools that even Rashawn Slater has, because I think Rashawn Slater had some really nice freaking tools outside of his own length. But I think Paris Johnson is the best of both worlds. I think his foot speed is nice. His set is pretty. For being a first-year offensive tackle. Again, he started in high school at offensive tackle, sure. His first year at the college level started offensive tackle, going from right guard to left tackle. So he still can continue to grow into that role. Again, he's longer than Peter Skoronski. So I like his arms. I like his build. His grip strength is phenomenal. Grip strength's phenomenal when he gets latched on. Foot speed's good. a mauler. He moves bodies off the line at the scrimmage. So again, when we go back and we talk about like a guy like Anton Harrison, doesn't really move bodies. That's the way it is with some of these others that will hit his honorable mentions, but he's a body mover in the run game as well. So I like his ceiling. And for me, he's the perfect mesh of, again, his tools aren't as good as Broderick. He's not as refined as Skoronski, but if you put them both together and took some of the parts of each of them, I would bet on that. And that's kind of where I'm at with Paris Johnson. So he's my OT1.
Yeah, really diversity of skill set, with this tackle class. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how everyone stacks up, especially after testing comes out and verified measurables and everything. But, I mean, our top three guys are not going to be, like down at the Senior Bowl, for example, or at an All-Star game. So I think it's very interesting to kind of see that and see just how much these underclassmen are coming in and dominating at their first years at position, especially with Broderick Jones and Paris Johnson. So it's very interesting to see, just how the list stacked up. But to kind of recap for my list, at five, was Anton Harrison. At four was DeJuan Jones. At three, Paris Johnson Jr. And at two was Broderick Jones. And then at one was Peter Skoronski. And yours, Corey?
Yeah, mine was DeJuan Jones at five, Anton Harrison at four, Broderick Jones at three, Peter Skoronski at two, and Paris Johnson at one. Again, I do take athletic testing into consideration in my ranking. So again, Broderick Jones could leap some people. Peter Skoronski could fall if he is the athlete that I think he is. And again, there's a common thing you'll say, don't count things twice. Like, I get it. But at the end of the day, the NFL is doing this. Like, they could say, I know this guy's athletic on tape, but if they go out and they blow the doors off of Lucas Oil, they're still going to say that guy's moving up. So why shouldn't we do the same? So that's kind of what I'm doing as well. So I do factor 80% film, 20% relative athletic score. Thank you, Kent Lee Platt. I know you're probably not listening, but if you are, thank you. Into my final score. So that has the ability to produce movement in my rankings. But for now, Jones is three, Skoronski two, Johnson one. Devin, let's highlight two names each in this class. And you kind of mentioned Wanya Moore, so we can talk about Wanya, but two names each who didn't make the cut in your top five, but you are still kind of excited about and think, you know, this guy could go fringe top 100, maybe even early day three and find a role pretty early in the NFL.
Yeah, for me, I think it's Wanya Morris is one of those guys that could go top 100. I don't think he will, just based on the tape right now. But if he goes down and really improves, I think his core strength, one, then two, how well he can place his hands, on his initial punch. Because he can recover. He has movement skills, especially in space. And he's starting to get to a point where he could, especially towards the end of the season, he was replacing hands and doing a better job replacing his hands. So you see a player that's improving. It's had a lot of hype even back to his Tennessee days, but I want to see if he can put it all together down Mobile. But he's a guy that I will watch out for sure. And then two, Darnell Wright, to me, it is an interesting case because, like, he's a big dude. Someone that really improved his play in 2022, but I do still have some questions about, how well does he move laterally? You know, when the pressure's put on him, to be able to handle some of those speedier rushes, with him being a bigger guy, like, is he going to be able to handle that? Can he replace his hands quicker? Those are some questions I had on his tape. I thought he was a solid player. And had some really good moments against some good edge rushers, but every game there was some inconsistencies, especially with his balance too. So I think a week down Mobile will either, for me, figure out if he's going to be a fringe top 50 guy, or is he going to be someone that goes like late round three and someone that kind of takes some time to develop.
Love it. Love it. I'm going to hit on Matthew Bergeron. I like Matthew Bergeron, man. He's a good player. I think he has a small hitch in his set. You know, he's got kind of a false step off the ball that limits his ability to gain depth. But I like his foot speed, man. I like his grip strength. His anchor's a little soft. But I do like Matthew Bergeron quite a bit. Again, he'll be in Mobile. So Matthew Berger, I really want him to be a top five tackle. Like, there, I really want him to be a top five tackle, but just not quite there yet. Just not there yet. So yeah, Matthew Bergeron's a guy for me.
Yeah, Bergeron's was a good watch too. Watch him earlier today. And there's a lot to like there. I think for him, he did a really good job. Being able to handle some of the speedier edge rushes. I thought, watching back some of his 2021 tape as well against Clemson, there were times he had some good reps against Miles Murphy, and then Miles Murphy kind of, did what Miles Murphy does. So
he had a rough go with Jared Verse as well, man. Jared Verse, that dude had a long 60 minutes against Jared Verse.
Yeah, it was, and I'm very surprised Verse is going back. That was a player that we forgot to mention that was heading back to school. Very surprised. But yeah. Yeah, Bergeron was a good watch and someone that, maybe he's in a conversation in the top five, if he puts together a nice weekend mobile.
Yeah, I agree. I'll do my second one now. Man, it's so hard to choose. This is, again, a good depth class. I mean, I could go. I mentioned Blake Freeland as a guy I'm really hoping can understand how to use his levers and keep people out of his chest in mobile. But I'm not gonna go with Freeland. I think we have to talk about Darnell Wright. Right? Like, we have to talk about Darnell Wright.
Right.
Some people have this guy as like a top three tackle in this class. Some people have this guy as a first round prospect. Some people I've seen have him as OT1. And I just don't see that with Darnell Wright. And again, I think he's a really good player. I think he's got a nasty snatch trap as well. I think he can move bodies. For me, when it comes down to Darnell Wright, though, I think he's a guard. I think he's a guard. And I say that because he's really top heavy, very top heavy. Again, I think he moves well for his size, but I do think his foot speed's a little bit slower comparatively. That's not to say he's not a smooth setter. It's just he's not a quick mover. I think there's evidence on tape that he doesn't shift his weight and change directions super effectively. But again, he's really top heavy, and that shows up. He can get out over his waist a little bit. He has a great deal of upper body strength. Yeah, I'll give it to him. But I think he's a guard, man. I think he's a guard, and I do score him as a tackle, which I probably will because I tend to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. I would have him at OT6, so right behind DeJuan Jones. But when it comes down to it, I truly think, one, I don't see a first-round prospect out of Darnell Wright, right, the same that other people do. And two, at the end of the day, I think he's going to find more success inside.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think about, like, for him – the lateral movement just worries me. It's just like, Tennessee, you think about their offensive system and some of their deficiencies on offensive line is masked just by the scheme. There's a lot of screens or a lot of quick throws. Like the LSU game is a perfect example, right? You're playing Ojulari and Ali Gay, we mentioned earlier. And a lot of that game was quick throws. It was a lot of quick screens, quick hitters, hole shots. So you didn't see him a ton, in like five-step drop back or seven-step drop back. And even the limited reps, you could see Ojulari was getting into his chest and causing him to kind of open up his hips a little bit just to close off the edge. And I think he gives up a little bit of a soft edge too. Like he has the strength to kind of ward them off. He has a really heavy punch that can, like keep defenders at bay. But I just worry in those times where, you're going to have like Myles Garrett and those type edge rushers where, they can win multiple ways. Right. And I just worry that he's going to get in a situation where he just doesn't have the foot speed to handle that consistently.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. All right, Devin, before we get out, let's shift away from offensive tackles a little bit. We talked a lot of offensive tackles here and I love it because I like watching offensive tackles and I love breaking them down, but we do this at the end of every episode. Devin, just give me one name of a player you've watched recently that you're like, man, I like this guy. I like this guy as you've been kind of working through your evals here.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to LSU defense, and it's not Ojulari, it's not Ellie Gay. It's actually one of the linebackers, Micah Baskerville.
Okay.
Fifth year senior for LSU. And to me, I don't know, he doesn't have a lot of high-end traits, but what I see is a guy that has instincts and has the ability to shoot gaps. Has some coverage ability too. He's carrying tight ends up the seam. He's chasing like mesh routes. He's chasing running backs as well. A couple of nice plays and coverage he made on Jahmyr Gibbs. To me, I think he's like a late day three guy, maybe a UDFA guy, but I can see him sticking around and being on an NFL roster. Because you can see before the play, he's like lining everybody up. There was a reverse that he had, or against Tennessee, where he saw the he was motioning the orbit motion before it happened, and then he went and made the tackle. So I see a lot of instincts. I see a lot of a guy that studies film and knows what's coming. He's clearly a high IQ guy if he's lining everybody up on that talented LSU defense that is going to have a lot of top 100 picks in over the next couple of years. And it just kind of stands out to me. And to me, I don't think this is a comp, but he kind of reminds me of like Malcolm Rodriguez, where he has so much game experience. He's someone that is not a athletic freak. He's not someone that, is gonna blow the doors off of testing, but he's always making tackles, he's always around the ball and always in passing lane. So Baskerville for me is an intriguing guy. I don't think he's going to get drafted anywhere close in the first like 5 or 6 rounds, but maybe late round 6, early round 7, they take a look at him, bring him in, even as a UDFA, and I think he has a chance to make a roster.
I like it. I got to dive into these linebackers a little bit more too. Again, I've watched a few, and we'll get to linebackers eventually on this podcast. But Baskerville is a guy who's always popped on tape, always popped on tape. So I'm excited to dive into him. But I'm gonna talk about an edge, and again, we'll get to edges more as well. But it's kind of a weird edge where I don't think he's a full-time edge at the NFL level. But Wisconsin's Nick Irving's tape is pretty good, man. Again, if he wasn't listed at 6'1", 227, I think, like, yeah, I could get on board with this guy. But again, he's listed at 6'1", 227. So I don't think that's a full-time edge. But I think if you find a team who runs a 3-4 defense and you can have him play one of the, like a Sam role in a 3-4 or even a 4-3 as a rotational pass rusher, or even a 3-4 in a rotational pass rusher. If you kick a defensive end in, who can you want to move around and bring him outside? Like, I think there's a lot of sub package versatility that Nick Herbig can bring. And I think, again, I think he could play Sam. So I there's people who talk about, he could transition to off ball. Like, that's not a move that's easily made. Like, that's not an easy move to make for a player. So I wouldn't wish that on anybody or try to project that on anybody or evaluate that on an edge rusher. But I think he plays Sam, and I think he could be a sub package nightmare in pass rushing situations. Really nice hands, really good get off, excellent bend. Like, I think, I mean, I've talked about BJ Ojulari ad nauseum on the podcast, but I think Ojulari's got the best bend in the class. I think Nolan Smith has really good bend in the class. Nick Irbig might be that third guy, might be that second guy. He's got some of the, he's in that tier one of guys with bend in this class. Like, so I think there's a lot to like about Nick Irbig. I don't love his physicality. I don't know how well he can set an edge at the NFL level. I don't know how well he can kind of hold his own in the trenches. But, again, he has the potential to be a Sam linebacker and a sub patch dream. So I really enjoyed his tape today when I was watching it.
Yeah, he's someone. I was watching Keanu Benton finishing up his eval, and man, he was tearing up some tackles. Just being able to bend, and I bring this up, or I brought this up to you before, but man, Iowa's tackles were awful this year. They were awful, and he had a field day against them. Just being able to consistently bend the edge, but yeah, he's someone that's on my list. He popped up in a top 10 mock the other day, which was a little bit surprising,
Yeah,
but
all that as
he,
well. We'll let the
yeah.
name slip by, but Nick Irbig is not going top 10. Nick Irbig is probably not going top 65. Again, I think you draft a guy like, you gotta know, I'm getting a Sam or sub package guy here. And typically those guys aren't top two rounds.
Right. Yeah. So that's another reason the name came up, but he's still a really good player. And I'm excited to dive into him. One more quick hitter for me before we get out of here. Julius Brents has some nice length.
Okay.
I think I like him probably more in the zone system because I just don't know his top end speed. Is he gonna be able to consistently stay with that? So a cover three scheme I think will be nice for him to utilize that length and ability to close on the football, his ball skills too. Has some nice reps against Johnston in the two matches they had too. And he's gonna be down on Mobile. So I'm interested to see how well he can move laterally and can he stay in the hip pocket? Because I did see him panic a little bit on deep passes and grab the receiver before and not get his head turned around, which is why I think for me I kind of like him more in the zone coverage type of look. And they ran a lot of different coverages at Kansas State. It wasn't just man. And he did made a couple of nice plays like in cover two, like mid pointing and just being able to stay on top in deeper zone coverages. But I'm just to see if he can hold his own in one-on-ones. But he's an interesting name. I would think day three type of guy for sure at this current point. But I'm interested to see just how well he competes down Mobile.
Guys like Brents make me qu cornerback play frustrates the crap out of me, man. I tend to lean towards foot speed. I tend to lean towards press. I tend to lean towards how oily a guy's hips are. And then those dudes with length always I'm always very low on them. And then those are always the guys who go into NFL and are immediate contenders, like Sauce Gardner, like Tariq Woolen. I did not think Tariq Woolen's tape was that great at UTSA. People loved him last year. He tested off the charts, obviously, but I didn't see a super fluid athlete on tape. Yeah, long people was there, but I didn't love it. But then he comes in and he leads the league in interceptions as a those long guys always give me fits. So I'm interested to see what I think of Brents when I get there. I'm adjusting a little bit this year because of that. Again, Sauce Gardner. Also, I didn't think he was super fluid on tape, and then he went out and did what he did at the combine as well. So I don't know, man. We'll see what happens, but definitely reshifting my mentality with corners a little bit because of guys like Sauce and Tariq.
Yeah, corners are a tough one, man. And especially because like they're it's not always there. All the answers you want are not always there. Or if they are, it's like, okay, you know what? Maybe he doesn't have great hips. He goes out in the NFL and balls. So it's an interesting position. I think that in edge, especially like the guys that are like not super bendy, but they can still win. Especially on the edge, it's like, okay, but how is this going to translate? Like Ali Gay is a perfect example that frustrated me. Like, you got the tools, you have what the NFL is looking for, in an edge rusher, but you're not doing any of the things that a top edge rusher would do, or you're just not using your hands enough. So, I totally get it, man. It's a process for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Again, we'll break down another position group next week. I'm not going to say it live on the air because we've done that before and then shifted and did a different position of what we said live. We will have another top next week. Again, by next week, we're going to be getting more into the Senior Bowl. Everybody is announcing by tonight. I'm still waiting on Leetu Latu. Still nothing. And it's 8:42 p.m. Eastern time as we're finishing up here. So still nothing to. I think he's the last big one we're kind of waiting on. But other than that, I think that's all I've got. You got anything to add?
Nah, that's all I got, man. But thanks guys for listening to this episode. Covered a lot in today's episode, started with some of the big declarations, some Senior Bowl names to watch, or at least we're watching closely as Mobile inches closer and our top five tackles. But we will be back soon. We'll have another episode for you guys on Daft on Draft podcast. But for now, follow me on Twitter at Real D underscore Jackson. Follow Corey on Twitter at Real Corey Kennan, and we'll see you guys next week.